listening to Blackout Radio, a voice of political conspiracy research. To call in, we have a secure line ready. Area code 604-525-4167. Again, just call area code 604-525-4167. You're listening to Blackout Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. And now your hosts, Anita Langley and Leno Sanner.
Well, hello. Hello, Anita.
Hello. Welcome to Black Op Radio. This is Black Op number 40. And today we have with us Dr. Boyd Ed Graves. And he's going to be talking to us about his mission, trying to reveal the truths behind the AIDS pandemic. Just to give a brief history, he was raised in Northeast Ohio before receiving an appointment to U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland in 1971. And in August of 1990, he was entered Ohio Northern University College of Law in Ada, Idaho. Ohio, I'm sorry, I'm tripping over my tongue tonight. Not a very good introduction, and I think we're going to have to just let this go naturally and let Dr. Boyd Ed Graves give us a proper introduction about his own life history. Maybe we could start that way. But we're a little set back because we're scrambling to get up and running on time, and I see Len is now able to join us properly. So here with your host, Len Osanek and Anita Langley. Let us just pave the way. Hi, Len.
Hi. Dr. Graves, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good. Can you hear us fine?
Yes, I can.
Good. We hear you clear, too.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry about the rough start. Perhaps you could tell us what motivated you to get into the direction that you're heading now, and maybe you could just take us from the start.
Well, you know, 9 years ago, I took an HIV test and learned I was HIV positive. And 9 years later, I am still researching this issue. I can't say, though, when I first began, I didn't know which direction this entire issue would go. But now, 9 years later, we have some pretty firm information as to the origin of this pandemic. And I think you are aware that we have a government flowchart document that has passed scientific and medical muster with respect to its authenticity as being the quintessential missing link document in establishing the true laboratory birth of HIV.
Well, that's a pretty major discovery to lay on the table for people, and I understand this is quite recent. Can you give us a little bit of description as to what is actually in this?
Yes. The flowchart is the research logic of the U.S. Special Virus Program. The U.S. Special Virus Program began officially in 1962, and it persisted for the next 15 years or so until about 1978-79. But during that time period, each and every experiment conducted under this program went towards the development of HIV. And by that I mean we have the yearly progress reports of this federal program that shows that this federal program is indeed the birthplace of HIV. In fact, we also have the budget for this federal program. From 1964 through 1978, the U.S. Special Virus Program spent $550 million to make HIV and other chronic illnesses.
Wow. Do they actually have anywhere listed the things that they were working with, or is that public?
Some of the actual disease portions and those kinds of things?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the progress reports, they are a step-by-step kind of narrative description of the special virus program. This program commingled something called VISNA. V-I-S-N-A. Are you familiar with VISNA?
That's a sheep virus, isn't it?
Well, it's gotten its name as a sheep virus. However, it has been proven by the proceedings of the United States, which is the medical and scientific proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, that indeed VISNA is the evolutionary ancestor to HIV. And this VISNA has some dubious beginnings, and I don't know if you know much about it at all, but it too does not appear to have a natural origin. However, VISNA in the genetic sequencing of HIV is indeed the death knell for any out of Africa origin for HIV.
Can you give us a little bit more, for those who don't really know much about this sort of thing, and that would include myself, it would be a bit of an education if you can tell us a bit about VISNA and how these things are associated.
Yes. You know, it's unfortunate, but it does appear that this disease element called VISNA originated in Germany. In 1932, at the same time that we were beginning the Tuskegee syphilis experiments, we were also testing an animal AIDS on the sheep in Iceland. The country of Germany sent 20 Karakul sheep to Iceland in 1932. Two of those sheep were carrying this VISNA disease. In 6 years, they had pandemics on the continent or the island of Iceland, as such that the entire sheep herds had to be destroyed as a way of controlling this animal wasting disease called VISNA. But for HIV, VISNA has never appeared in human disease. That's another way that we know that it is a portion of this hybrid virus. Indeed, that they have a strand of an animal disease mixed in with a strand of human tissue, as such to make it have some degree of receptivity to the human condition. But indeed, we are looking at a federal program that commingled animal viruses into human tissues for the sole purposes of creating diseases for which no natural immunity could have been acquired. And this is also the language that was used by the U.S. Pentagon on June 9, 1969, as they prepared to make and to create a disease for which no natural immunity could have been acquired. That disease we have now known to have come to know to be HIV. And indeed, since we now show that HIV is a bioengineered disease, yes, the cure experiments are there. Before they released AIDS, they also had the cure experiments that were conducted under this federal program, the special virus.
Now, that was under the 1969 program, I think, Dr. MacArthur?
Yes, Dr. MacArthur's testimony is paramount as we look back now over this entire the entire landscape, I guess, of the 20th century. Because, indeed, we go back to about 1902 and the creation of the Institute for Experimental Human Evolution, the Station for Experimental Evolution. That served as a starting point for a eugenics movement in the United States that virtually ran unabated the entire 20th century. And at the head of that eugenics movement is indeed the foundation behind this population control push, this 21st century Malthusian kind of Darwinian kind of approach. You find the Rockefeller family.
Yeah, I noticed that that you make mention on your website, John D. Rockefeller. Could you just let us know what role he was playing in all of this?
Well, yes. On March 16, 1970, former President Richard M. Nixon signed into law the Public Law 91-213, which in essence authorized HIV. On that day, in front of Democrats and Republicans who bipartisan support brought this bill to passage, President Nixon authorized John D. Rockefeller III to be the chair of the Population Commission. And indeed, Mr. Rockefeller assumed that position, and one of his recommendations, and I think we are all aware now from the epidemiological evidence, was that we would attempt to stabilize the populations of the Third World. And I think you are aware that there is massive death occurring in sub-Saharan Africa.
Is there actually evidence left behind by these committee-type situations indicating the methods that they were considering to reduce population?
Well, yes. This special virus program seems to have had no other purpose but for the development of not only this lethal new agent called what we now call HIV, but also these incapacitating agents, almost like the mad human illnesses, i.e. the chronic fatigue, immune deficiency syndrome, which causes people to be severely tired throughout most of every given day. It appears to all be out of the same cesspool of biological development of the United States government. And if we are not going to address this issue in a manner such as this forum, we believe that these programs are going to go unabated well into the 21st century, much to the detriment of humanity.
Dr. Garth Nicholson has been doing a lot of research with regards to vaccines and the problems they're having with respect to spreading disease, in particular mycoplasmas being at the root of a lot of diseases. How do you think that vaccines might have possibly played a role in the spread of AIDS?
What we know now is that, and I think we're pretty firm with our interpretation, we believe that the special virus program produced at least 60,000 liters of HIV and other illnesses relative to mycoplasmas. We believe that those vaccines that went to Africa, the smallpox vaccine that went to sub-Saharan Africa, was complemented, not contaminated. It was purposefully and intentionally complemented with the special virus program. The way that you know this, that as you saw the end of smallpox, you saw the rise of AIDS. And not only did you see the rise of AIDS, but you saw a mass infection of AIDS, which correlates to the mass inoculations through the complemented vaccine program, the smallpox vaccine. That's how it got its start, and its massive start there in Africa. With respect to the United States, we did indeed complement a vaccine program that went primarily to homosexuals. Thus, in this country, when this virus began, it appeared as a homosexual disease in the United States. We now know that African American women are the fastest growing group of new infection in the United States today. And our government has yet to offer an explanation as to how a white homosexual disease can transfer itself into a health problem for black women.
Well, that is a bit of a leap from the way it was first introduced, and I'm sure that anybody with the reasoning mind would have to ask that question. How could it be a gay disease and then all of a sudden attack basically, a female minority in a sense?
Absolutely. The most furthest removed from white homosexuals. So the correlation there, that in and of itself alone requires an explanation and some degree of accountability from our government. We believe that our point is well taken on that point alone.
I have to wonder if it's at all possible that this could have been accidentally spread, that perhaps it, the way that vaccines are made, that viruses can be transmitted and, call it, I don't know if it's sloppy science or was naive science, but is it possible that, while yes, this virus program, no doubt was coming up with a lot of stuff and probably is still coming up with a lot of stuff that's very unpleasant, there's plenty of evidence out there in other realms, there still is the question, is it possible, do you think, that this could have been accidentally transmitted, or do you just think that's just beyond the scope of reason?
Sure. You know, I think we have just seen the world's number one expert, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, make a statement with respect to, this issue. I believe it is his contention that HIV exists by design, it is an intentional act. I think he also comes to the conclusion that perhaps it may be a necessary intentional act, and that I haven't had further discussion on. We've had a lot of calls today. We've been deluged with responses to Dr. Horowitz's perpetrations in regards to this. However, we are of the opinion that this element called VISNA could not appear in human disease but for by design. It was not by accident.
So this is deliberate, then?
It is deliberate to call the black populations. I think Dr. Horowitz's speech, and in particular his last paragraph of his speech, addresses this point that, when all the smoke clears, we have had a federal virus development program in the United States that spent $550 million from 1964 to 1978 to make HIV and other illnesses. We believe that we are entitled to an accountability of that program. We believe that for those of us who are victims of this federal virus program, that we are indeed entitled to an apology in short order.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of money. That's a lot of money now. But when we're talking about 1960s...
Well, 62,
the program
62,
started.
Yeah, started in 62. That's a tremendous... That means a lot of people doing the research, not just one guy in a lab somewhere playing with...
Yes, it was a huge undertaking. And the thing that made it so sinful... As far as I'm concerned, the thing that places it so squarely in this category of black operations is that this program met every year for a status check to see if they had found it yet. They met every year at Hershey Medical Center at Penn State University. So not only was it a massive coordinated effort to find this human wasting disease, but it is indeed one of the greatest secrets in the history of the world, that there was a second Manhattan. There was a second Manhattan Project. That second Manhattan Project helped spread HIV. There is simply no doubt about it.
And perhaps in the end more efficient in with respects to its goals than the first Manhattan Project.
Yeah, I think the name for it was ethnic specific in some of the documentation I read.
Well, now the flowchart that you have come across indicates a time frame, as you said. Do you think that it indicates an ending of this program, or was that just the ending of that particular phase?
Well, you know, Anita, that's profound. When Nixon signed this into law on March 16, 1970, he theoretically only projected this until the end of the 20th century. We are beyond that point. We know that we can rework the experiments in the special virus program and dismantle HIV. We know that we can do that. So if this was a program to call the black population as it related to the 20th century, they have done that. We need to join our forces together to dismantle this program. And the way we do that is to call for a review of the U.S. special virus program. That review will allow the good people of this world a chance to have a future. Without a review of this federal program, we are all doomed.
Now, I have a question about recombinants. Now, if people are going to develop a virus that's a killer virus, presuming, I suppose, that they think that they're going to make an antidote of some sort, would the science have existed way back then to understand the nature of recombinants and how difficult it is to nail down every possible variation of a virus that might come out? Or do you think that there is actually something out there that could generally take out HIV, period, and in all its forms?
Oh, there certainly is. On page 24 of Progress Report number 8, which represents the year 1971, they specifically identified a drug compound called N-dimethyl rifampicin as being an inhibitor of HIV, or inhibitor of this special virus. So we notice now that more and more rifampicin derivative products are being leaked into the HIV drug treatment process. So we are certain that since this is a federal program, that it would not have been released if they did not have the appropriate inhibitors and controls over it. In fact, the flowchart shows that in section phase 4A of the flowchart, they indeed did have those controls over HIV before they released it. So, again, we want to rework those experiments because we are certain we can dismantle HIV.
Well, you seem to have a lot of faith in the medical competency of people a couple decades ago. I personally, I don't have a lot of faith in the general areas now, I mean, except where some doctors are starting to pull away from their program teaching and have opinions of their own, too much learning is being encouraged by drug companies with their own special interests. And I'm really actually kind of encouraged if you think that there is good evidence that there is something out there, because at some point a stranglehold could be put on and maybe it will really get out to the public. You know, I've kind of thought all along maybe, they sort of let the genie out of the bottle if this was man-made and didn't know how to put it back in.
No, they've known how to put it back in. However, it's accomplishing the purpose that it was intended to do. And that purpose is to call the black population. Indeed, they have been projecting throughout most of the 20th century that they needed to do something to stymie the birth rate of sub-Saharan Africa in particular. And we do show now, epidemiologically speaking, that we have had a mystery virus attack sub-Saharan Africa exactly where the International Monetary Fund designated in 1967 that this area and these people were being cut off due to the IMF's austerity program. So, I mean, there's direct correlation here that this is a man-made pandemic. The flowchart proves it. The progress report proves it. The Pentagon's testimony proves it. The VISTA in the genetic sequencing of HIV is absolute proof. There is no way for an Icelandic sheep gene sequence to appear in the gene sequence of HIV but for the laboratory.
Yeah, that's a good point. I have a question just with regards to the HIV. As the final catalyst in shutting down a person's immune system. Now, why do you think that this they would design a disease that would take, is it 8 years roughly that it takes for someone to die?
To succumb to the disease?
Yeah, succumb.
Why would they design a disease with a long latency period, i.e., if they were trying to kill, and this is the question that comes up, Len. They say, well, Boyd, if they were trying to kill people, why wouldn't they just, have something come out the sky and people would drop dead? Well, that's the shock kind of value that we got, and the lessons, apparently, that they learned from the World War II era, that to line people up and put them in furnaces was unacceptable. However, to have a lingering illness whose etiology is unknown leads to this muddy water. I call it sometimes this fuzzy biology in light of our current administration, so that this thing can fester and so that it can be passed on from one person to another, and indeed an entire continent of people can be wiped out. They are predicting by the year 2066 there will be no more black Africans on the continent of Africa.
Wow. I mean, I guess that is assuming that humans don't at some point manage to develop their own resistance to this. Do you think, is there evidence of that? I mean, I've heard of the occasional case where individuals have personally overcome it. What do you think about that?
Well, as a 9-year survivor myself, that, we're so happy to still be here, to still have this opportunity to fight on for another day. So in that regard, there may be some natural immunity to HIV. However, what has happened here, and particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, is that because of the political structure, because of the intense stratification between the class citizens there in Africa, that we are destined for one of the greatest human tragedies of all time. I mean, it's already underway. It is as gross a human tragedy as I could possibly imagine. And it all has emanated from this eugenics, Nazism, VISTA program that has been co-mingled with the Nazi scientists here in the United States after Operation Paperclip and World War II. We imported all of this Nazi VISTA into the United States, and now I have VISTA in me. HIV did not come out of Africa. HIV came from the U.S. Special Virus Program.
Now, do you think that that HIV is a combination, not just this, because people have indicated that it contains monkey virus, and there has been some research which has shown also missing links there. So do you think that there was actually a combination of several animal species used, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The experiments address that point as well. As far as HIV is concerned, it really is not a monkey disease at all. HIV came before this simian virus, this monkey immunodeficiency virus. There has, as you and I look back over the 20th century, over the 19th century, we can point to no decades-long episodes of primates wasting in Africa, of primates piling up and dying. There have never been mass monkey immunodeficiency ever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there were plagues in Europe and things like that, but I don't recall ever actually hearing about plagues wiping through Africa. Not to say it didn't happen, but that's an interesting point that you bring up.
Well, I mean, there are no scientific papers that support a historical period in Africa in any way where there is mass death of primates. It just never happened. Thus, for us to then believe that somehow this is an animal illness that transferred itself to humans when there's no evidence of any animal illness preceding this alleged transfer to humans brings into question that much more. This flowchart document, it is proof. It shows in purpose, it shows the purpose, it shows the design, it shows the intent, and it also shows state management. This flowchart document, coupled with the 15 progress reports of the U.S. Special Virus Program, are indeed the genesis of the HIV and the AIDS pandemic. There is simply no question about it. Many of the scientists and medical doctors who have reviewed the flowchart have posted their comments. I think you're familiar with the comments that have been posted with regards to the reviews. And we are elated that more and more scientists and medical doctors, not only from the United States, but around the world, are all coming on board and saying, this program is the genesis of HIV. We believe that if you sign our petition on our website, on our web domain at boydgraves.com, that signing our petition leads to the best chance that we have for accountability from the United States for this federal program that spent $550 million to make AIDS.
Now, do you want to elaborate on the flow chart?
Well, yes. Let's do it this way, Len, that it's the, and let's do the reasonable person approach, the common person approach. The reasonable person in the United States today believes that HIV is a virus that depletes the immune system, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. This flowchart shows that the United States, in 1971, was developing a virus that would deplete the immune system. That's how complete this flowchart is. So, should this flowchart be reviewed with the secrets that it might unfold towards better therapy and treatment for people with HIV and AIDS? Yes, it should. Will this flowchart be reviewed? Now, that's a separate question, because there are those who believe the population of the black population of the world does need to be called. I think that's reflected in Len Horowitz's speech that he gave in Africa. That indeed, I believe he's saying that there is justification to call ethnic groups. I believe that's what he's saying.
Right. I meant a little more. I haven't myself seen your flowchart. I've just been getting your daily email and whatnot, and I'm just saying, where did it come from? Who discovered it?
Yes, sir. The flowchart is page 61 of Progress Report number 8, and that's from the year 1971 of the U.S. Special Virus Program. That's where it first appears.
Okay, so
it also appears in the number 10 report, number 9, and the number 10 reports as well. However, it was written. The flowchart was drawn and drafted by two of the National Cancer Institute scientists, Dr. Lou Caris and a Dr. Rauscher. We know that the flowchart represents the research logic of how you would develop an enzyme, a microorganism, that can be constructed in such a fashion that would, once it enters the human system, it would in fact deplete and bring down the immune system, lower the defensive radar of mankind, so as to allow for any of a number of opportunistic infections to take hold. The flowchart is indeed the coordinating document of this program that has existed in the United States through all those years, where we can now rework back through this document many of those experiments, particularly those experiments as it relates to cures and inhibitors of HIV. That's where we're going. That's the accountability that we want from the United States government. We want a review of this federal program. We believe our cause is just. We believe our cause is noble. We are challenging the United States.
Right. Okay, and to elaborate a little more, and this is, you said, a research work of 1971, an official government document?
Sir?
Sorry. I'm just saying, how did you find it? What book was it in?
This is it's in the Special Virus Progress Reports.
Progress Reports from 1971.
Yeah, that's number 8. That's Progress Report number 8. The flowchart is page 61. You know, to your listeners, they too can find and locate the flowchart independently. It's available through the public library system. All one needs to do is call your public library, ask to speak to the interlibrary loan person, and then ask for references under the Special Virus Cancer Program. There are 8 listings. The flowchart is, of course, listed in the reference that's under the year 1971. And believe it or not, you yourself can get the flowchart through the public library system, which is a further authentication of the document. That it is not a document that I myself created, because it isn't. And for you to be able to access it through the public library system, I think, is a wonderful thing. You can also receive it from the NCI archives. The librarian there would be happy to copy off the flowchart and fax it to you at any given moment. So this is a government document. This is a federal program. This program represents design and intent. Indeed, they intended to make HIV. We have HIV. We are killing black people in particular and other undesirables. If we do not address this issue now, it will be too late for all of us.
Yeah, that's astounding that you've done this kind of legwork and dug up these kind of things, because so many people would just not even know where to start. I know I've heard Len Horowitz speak before, and some of his discoveries were just accidental. He was looking through here, and I think if I recall, he was in Memphis in some library and just stumbled across the right book he was looking for. So that's good that you've laid this out, that anybody else interested right now can go research this and just confirm what you're telling us.
Oh, absolutely. Len, it's my opinion that the flowchart document is indeed the tip of a biological iceberg aimed amidship the African Titanic.
You know, I have to wonder what else is out there and people just don't know what to look for, sitting in a library somewhere.
Well, I think what we're finding is that when we did the Manhattan Project, many people are unaware that after we dropped those bombs, that several years later, most of those Japanese people came down with leukemia. So, in essence, we learned how to do our aerobiology vis-a-vis our Manhattan Project and our atomic bomb project, and many are speculating that the next wave will be some type of chemical trail of some sort or another, that will have, again, an ethnic-specific nature.
We've got a question here. Any chance, do you think, of a next level of AIDS, for example, a mutation, maybe something that transfers more easily airborne, or do you think this is something that could possibly become something of that nature?
You know, it's getting scary, I must admit, because the more we look into this, the more scarier it gets. Now we're finding that there is a direct connection between HIV and influenza.
Really?
In fact,
wow.
Robert Gallo is saying that HIV's cure may be something to do with influenza. So that to me imparts the understanding that this venue of chemtrails and of aerial biology, you know, is a very, very, very real vector.
Wow. Yeah, then you just mentioned chemtrails. Do you think that that might be a method that is being used to transmit some of these things? People have theories and they see stuff, and I've seen some explanations that maybe would account, but then other people see some actual goofy stuff fall. It's hard to know what to think. You know, are we just wrecking the atmosphere, or is something being dropped on us in addition to injected? And that's an interesting thought, because then everybody's a victim, not just
maybe not. If they can work out the differences from an ethnic perspective, and their kill ratios are such, my understanding is that they've got a excuse me a kill ratio where it's 98 blacks would be killed and 2 whites would be sacrificed. So they're saying that's acceptable, that you know, a 1 in 10 kind of scenario for whites to demise in the midst of all that they're doing to vanquish the black race. So I'm very fearful that the next wave, if we don't do something now by standing up, calling for accountability on this federal program, the next wave is going to come from some type of air disbursement, and I'm almost certain it won't take as long a latency period as what we have found and seen with HIV. So if we don't do something now, I think we have all kissed ourselves goodbye.
And well, on that note, you actually you have a lawsuit going, don't you?
Yes, we do. On September 28, 1998, nearly 3 years ago, we felt that the information was so absolute and so overwhelming that something had to be done. We have been dismissed at the district court level and the appellate level as being a frivolous issue. However, in light of the flowchart and the tremendous amount of scientific papers that have been presented over the last 100 years, we are certain that we may have a hearing post at the U.S. Supreme Court. We are there. We have people who have signed our petition to have helped us get there. We are all waiting on the U.S. Supreme Court. It is a wonderful position because we are not stopping. We want an accountability of the U.S. Special Virus Program. We can prove that this is truly the laboratory birth. This is the birthplace of HIV.
Have you had any support from any members of Congress, et cetera?
Well, you know, I liken Congress to O.J. Simpson. The murder glove fits. Congress has unclean hands. They are incapable of investigating themselves with respect to this hidden population control agenda. This is so contrary and adverse to my Constitution that I cannot believe that now that I am not slated for truly a capital punishment element with respect to HIV, because we're living longer, I am now subjected to social rape and constitutional rape. This is the most hideous federal program I've ever seen and been involved with in my entire life. And I'm demanding and requiring the good people of this country and of the world to take a stand. If we don't take a stand now, it may be too late tomorrow.
And the petition that you are asking people to sign will, of course, help you bring this forward to the right authorities.
Well, we're asking for a review of the U.S. Special Virus Program. We believe that the more people who sign our petition, and it's online there at boydgraves.com, the more people who sign our petition, the better chance we have to get this accountability of this federal program. We have to pay attention. We have to pay attention. Otherwise, we will pay with thousands and hundreds of thousands of more lives.
Now, I can certainly understand your concerns where politicians are involved, but I've felt a little more optimistic recently hearing that, for example, Dan Burton has made a big deal of conflicts of interest where vaccines are concerned, and one has to wonder if there are people like him, Jesse Ventura also taking a stand, that everybody being an individual, that it might be possible to win some favor in those circles, and it keeps pressure on. I just wonder if he's even aware of what you're doing, if you've contacted him at all.
Representative Burton?
Yes.
it's kind of awkward here in the United States. Everything goes through politics. They don't look at your issue. They look at the party affiliation pin you may be wearing as to how an issue is dealt with. It is so contrary, again, to, you know, my government and my constitution, but that seemingly is how things are done here. It is a party affiliation kind of venue, and if you're not a party member, you receive very, very little attention.
You know, actually, it's interesting that you mention that, because that's something I've really noticed being up here in Canada. We have multiple parties, too, but most people don't announce themselves as being, here a liberal or a reformist or a Democrat as part of their personality. Yet I have noticed, if you watching American TV, people routinely announce themselves as Democrats or Republicans. I find that fascinating. It doesn't really give much leeway for having a personal opinion.
Well, it's not meant to either. I think you'll know that going back a number of centuries, even, that there appears to be something, some power behind the throne, some power behind the government. This illusion of a two-party system here in the United States allows for what I call the waddling in the quagmire. It allows for issues to be rumbled over. It allows for issues to be not even looked at all. It goes on the whim or fancy of the individuals involved. It is hardly a democratic form of government. Hardly.
Yeah, speaking of politics, kind of reminds me of, I think back in Reagan's day when the society or the Foundation for AIDS Research, I think, was headed by kind of a figurehead, Magic Johnson. And he quit over his inability to get anything done, and he was wanting more money spent on research and whatnot, and I don't think like you say, these people have already spent enough money on research. That's, you know, researching how to design it, and that they may, as you were implying, I think, earlier, may already have a cure. And it's just strange. I kind of thought that when Magic Johnson was taken down from that his title there, and he just kind of resigned and left it up, I thought, I wonder if he was somehow made available, don't make waves here, take these vitamin shots or whatever and you'll be better. And it's just kind of, I've been curious to follow his career, and I know that since he was HIV positive, that he's been kind of keeping a low profile. He had a TV show there for a while, but he doesn't seem to be getting any sicker at all. And it'd be very interesting to see if he ever has that failing health due to AIDS, or if he just kind of is miraculously just lives through it all.
Oh, I think what we're seeing now here, in the early part of this century, is that certainly if you have the economic means, you can certainly survive HIV. There's no question in my mind. What is the problem, though, is for those of us who aren't in a position like Magic Johnson, as to what our day-to-day travails are, it is a completely different disease for those of us who are on the bottom rung.
No, but then that indicates that there is already a cure.
Well, I mean, the flowchart and the progress reports here, some of them, the progress reports are 300, 400 pages apiece. They clearly indicate that there was a federal virus development program. What we can't seem to break through on is this disinformation campaign that seems to be a centralized information campaign that allows for the continual death of applicants while we muddy the water with this discussion-oriented kind of non-resolution kind of talks. I mean, we're not getting anywhere while 200 blind people drop dead every hour.
Right then. But then, I guess to my point of saying, if there already is a cure, this is the great subversion that this
Absolutely.
Is released.
Absolutely.
And then to make that point further, if drug companies are out there searching for a cure, do you think they're just taking money hand over fist, just playing around when they may know full well that what the cure is, and they're just here, take this funding as long as you're looking for something?
Yeah, you know, I think we have to be careful, though, too, there, because even within drug companies, people just have their jobs, too. Probably a lot of people who might be working for the bad guys don't even realize they're working for the bad guys.
Yeah, they're still under research.
I mean, I have to wonder how many people would have worked on a program like this and not really, I mean, so compartmentalized, not really understood where the research was going. How possible is that?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was possible for some scientists to have worked on the special virus program and not be culpatory in that sense that they didn't go to Hershey Medical Center every year. Now, the scientists who went to Hershey Medical Center every year, we don't believe that they could use that excuse.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they were attending they were attending the seminar.
I felt, and this is my perspective. My perspective is that when we imported the Nazi scientists following World War II, you guys are both familiar with Operation Paperclip?
Yeah.
When we imported the Nazi biological scientists into the United States and dispersed them through our biological underground railroad through MD Anderson in Houston and University of Michigan and John Hopkins and all the other wonderful institutions of higher learning where they attended, this meeting at Hershey Medical Center every year was an opportunity for the Nazi scientists to have a homecoming every year.
Yeah, there's so much about that. And it's even starting to come out a lot more in the mainstream these days and just generally accepted, oh, this was just what was done. And nobody really thinks about it too much. But people have to ask, those people were given protection because they had research, and much of that research was centered around torturing people. What happened with all that research, and was it continued? Was it, I mean, you can hear rumors, but who really knows if you don't see the documentation, see the evidence? But
well, we have the documentation. We
know
that Vista came from Nazi Germany. We know that on page 39 of Progress Report Number 8, which is from 1971, they state that Vista has never appeared in human disease. We know from the proceedings of the United States in 1995. That indeed, Visna makes up 30% of HIV. Identical sequencing from Visna to HIV. Now, the only way for that to have occurred is through the hybrid combination, the recombination combinations that occurred through the special virus program. We're certain on that.
Now, you have a new book coming out. I understand.
Yes, I do.
In
the origin.
Two and a half weeks, is it going to be available?
You know, we'll in 2.5 weeks we'll be shipping them out. We're certain we've got word today that it'll be back in that time frame. We are elated. State Origin, The Evidence of the Laboratory Birth of AIDS by Boyd E. Graves. And if I could give my 800 number, I'd like to.
That would be great.
Yeah, 1-800-257-9387. State Origin, The Evidence of the Laboratory Birth of AIDS by Boyd E. Graves.
Okay, great. So we'll have to recommend our listeners, and I'm sure they'll, after listening to this, you know, you'll probably get a few orders on that. It would be a lot more in-depth than what we can cover in this brief program. But how long did it take you to write the book?
Well, the book's kind of... I'm heading towards my 49th birthday, so I guess 49...
49
it's
years.
Of a hodgepodge of how we got to this point, you know, of who I am, the person. And once we got into this fight of being in a court battle, some of the court documents, some of the correspondence from, you know, the government, from Congress, and some of the movers and shakers, I mean, it's just a hodgepodge. And, you know, I guess I kind of started doing it in earnest, maybe about 2.5 years ago. So I'm really glad to see it finally at the printers, and we're happy that we've reached that milestone.
Great. Well, I'm actually looking forward to getting a copy of that.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, you also mentioned on your website here that there were a couple national security defense memorandums. Now, that's a very interesting thing, if you can associate defense memorandums with this sort of thing, because that kind of tells you that the nation was on some sort of red alert or concern. Could you elaborate a little bit more about what these were about?
Yes, I could, and thanks for asking. What has happened is that as we look back over the 20th century and try to piece this thing together, you know, did it happen by nature? Was it intentional? It was intentional. all of the work has gone towards the development of this human wasting syndrome, this human wasting illness. What we can tell you is that these experiments to develop HIV actually go back to the time period shortly after we freed the slaves here in the United States. That was 1865. In 1873, we had a federal quarantine act that was passed primarily to kind of give the United States police powers to gather up people who are exhibiting malaria and some of the other illnesses that were known at that time. However, we went with a full throttle-up of a kind of a evolutionary biological program when we, in 1887, the United States mandated a laboratory of hygiene. That laboratory of hygiene was to investigate diseases of world origin. There were no diseases of world origin. Diseases don't appear across the world. But that's what the U.S. Laboratory of Hygiene was put into place in 1887. It is my belief, and many others as well, that Nazi Germany copied the U.S.'s Laboratory of Hygiene as it relates to racial hygiene.
Okay. And how did that lead to these National Security Defense Memorandums? If I got this right, number 314 and number 46?
Yeah, they are all a part of the stealth policies of the United States that support the population policies that National Security Defense Memorandum number 314 was just a signature pen over by Gerald Ford, Brent Scowcroft of his staff, to put into place Nixon's NSSM 200, which is the National Security Study Memorandum on population and overpopulation overseas. What we've done is that we have incorporated into our national security this venue of population control as being a national security issue, i.e. that as it relates to sub-Saharan Africa, that Africa's resources are a higher priority than Africa's people. So we have had to put into place defense memorandum policies to support our policy of the resources of Africa a higher priority than Africa's people. So what you find in National Security Defense Memorandum number 46, which is written in March of 1978, so just before the pandemic, they issued a memorandum dealing with Africa and the U.S. black movement to have in place a contingency plan when African Americans learned that it was indeed the United States that had created HIV and that it was indeed the United States that was depopulating Africa. There is a plan in place to provide more investment in the black community, to have more black elected officials of their own choosing, i.e. that the government wants to have, that all of this is by design, that we will appease the black people vis-a-vis through a defense memorandum as such in order to accomplish our total goal, and that is to cull the black population of Africa, if not vanquish the black population of the world.
Well, that's quite a summation there, I guess, for that one. Says a lot. I suppose that, you know, people could get uptight and righteous and say, you know, never happened, never happened. But, you know, Hitler was willing to do it. I think he had a lot of support. And, you know, I'm not saying one way or another, but I certainly can see the possibilities. And, you know, you provide the evidence, so that people just have to look at that and they have to figure it out for themselves. I mean, I never recommend to anybody that they believe anything anybody says, but, you know, people go and take a look for yourselves and figure it out for yourselves.
Well, we think the flowchart document is the quintessential missing link document because it is one document that this government cannot waltz around. The flowchart can see. It has eyes. This document is the blueprint for African genocide. It is African Holocaust on paper.
Yeah, and as well, in the early days in the gay population as well. So certain groups have been targeted.
Well, make no mistake about that. They recruited homosexuals, by the way, for that experimental hepatitis B vaccine that was complemented. They recruited homosexuals. They recruited white homosexuals. You had to be promiscuous, and you had to be in a certain age group. That's why it appeared as a white homosexual disease. But, you know, if you look back in National Security Study Memorandum 200, written by Kissinger, you'll find that they told the African leaders that they would not do to their countries what they weren't willing to do to the United States. So in the early days of this pandemic, when the African leaders looked across the waters, they saw white people dying in the United States. I mean, it was homosexuals who were dying, but they saw white people dying in the United States, and in essence, the United States lived up to its commitment in that NSSM 200 that they would also do to people here in the United States what they were going to do to people in Africa.
Well, you know, it's very hard to look a friend in the eyes and intentionally hurt them. But when it's somebody you don't know, I guess perhaps there's a lot of people on this planet that maybe don't have a lot of conscience. And that's pretty scary, but nowadays with the technology that's going around, a lot of havoc could be reaped that way. And I personally like to be more of an optimist, though, and think that these challenges are put here for us to expose them. And technology is coming to a head the way it is now. People can communicate and talk amongst themselves, and people like you can make a big difference going out and telling what you found. And who would have thought that, 50 years ago, didn't you have to really be a somebody to be heard?
Yes, I understand.
I like to be an optimist. I realize it's very difficult for people who are faced with a deadly illness, and it's no good to say, well, everybody's got their time, because you don't feel like that when your days are more numbered than the next person's. On the grand scheme of things, I guess we're fighting a war, and that war is about awareness on a big level, and AIDS is a big part of it. I think it's a part, though. It's not the whole picture. We have to ask ourselves what lets this sort of thing happen, and much of that comes right down to the individual people giving up responsibility for themselves and allowing authority figures to run their lives for them and trusting people that don't deserve their trust.
Well, I certainly think that those are all big parts of it, and you know, where I say we are today is that we pick ourselves up by the bootstraps and be truthful with where we are, and that is we can make a difference. We can sign this petition calling for review of the U.S. Special Virus Program. I think that's the first step. We can watch this Supreme Court case so that we are not hoodwinked and set aside and brushed away just because they can. It is our collective effort that is going to make a difference here. And it's already starting to happen, not just here in the United States and of course there in Canada, but I think you guys are aware it's happening all around the world, person by person. We're going to win on this issue because we are the human race, and we will let nature determine the finish line, not man.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think that's the way. I guess there's the other argument that people might make. Well, humans are part of nature, and I suppose some people think that perhaps that gives them the right to make those types of decisions. I hope that as people become more compassionate, and maybe I'm extra optimistic there, thinking that that's actually happening, that there's less and less of that going on.
But there's the problem of that mindset in the Department of Defense that Darwin, the Malthusian and the survival of the fittest type mentality, that if you do whatever, however cunning you outwit your foe, and you survive, you were destined, because that's the law of nature, survival of the fittest. So that pretty well gives you a carte blanche to do out these kind of devious programs, the MK Ultras and all this other work that Dr. Graves is outlining tonight.
Yeah, you know, the federal project name, you said McUltra, you are familiar with MK Naomi?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. MK Naomi, I'm putting on record as having solved the acronym there. Of course, we know the M and the K are Maneker and Cotton. Robert Maneker and Paul Cotton, the authors of the Special Virus Program. Are you familiar with M and K?
No, I did not know that.
No, Robert Maneker is the M. Paul Cotton, K-O-T-I-N, is the K. Now, the Naomi, N-A-O-M-I, that is, Negroes are only momentary individuals.
Oh, as opposed to the rest of us, aren't we momentary too?
There will be no more black people on the continent of Africa by the year 2066. They want to start with black people, and they're doing a hell of a job already.
Well, they've got a war to fight because there's a whole bunch of people that I think don't think that they should get away with that. But I imagine they're getting pretty far into it, because what is the average life expectancy now in Africa? I mean, it's in the 30s if it's not... it's approaching that, isn't it?
Yeah, we're approaching a critical period here, and it has become so because of our own complacency. It's not affecting us, so therefore we haven't involved ourselves. Homosexuals are dying. We weren't homosexuals. We didn't care. Blacks are dying. We aren't black. We don't care. You know, now you start dying, there's nobody there to assist. So, I mean, it's a dangerous thing that is happening here, where they're separating us and stratifying us in such a fashion, you know, that we will all lose.
You know, in a cold and calculating way, it would have had to been a brilliant maneuver to pick a small segment of society that was somewhat ostracized and, so to speak, at that time, just coming out of the closet. And, you know, because there are so many people that had moral issues with that anyways, that, I mean, it's taken how many years just to begin to recover from that stigma, and still people talk about AIDS, and, you know, how many people think of it as a gay disease?
Well, I mean, the confusion, the disinformation, the centralized disinformation has done its job. African-American women are the fastest growing group coming down with HIV and AIDS in the United States today, and no one can explain why.
I mean, that's astounding.
Well, was there anything else that we haven't covered here? Any more points that you'd like to bring up? We've gone a little bit over time, and I know we were a little late starting. We want to make sure that we're not missing anything before we sign off here.
Well, let's do this. Let's challenge the medical and scientific communities to prove that HIV is not a hybrid virus. Prove to us lay people that HIV does not separate itself at the cleavage sites, indeed, where it was spliced together. We say that when HIV separates, when you separate the genetic sequence, it falls apart at the exact cleavage sites where it would have been sewn together.
And
spliced together is more the appropriate term, but it's true.
DNA.
But in scientific terms, that's something that that speaks volumes. I understand that for the layperson, it's like saying, well, okay, you've sewn a shirt together. Does it come apart at the seams? And is that from one piece of fabric and that from another piece of fabric? So one chunk is from perhaps a sheep. One chunk is from a monkey.
From a cow.
From a cow.
Right. And slivered in there with some monkey blood and some human blood, and by golly, by gum, you have something that once it enters the human system, we have no natural immunity against it.
It looks like we've got our work cut out for us over the next several years.
Well, we think we do. We also believe, though, that this flowchart document is helping us in a major way. We are re-educating the world. That flowchart document is definitive proof of a federal virus development program. Yes, it is.
Okay, well, on that note, I guess it's time for us to sign off. And it's been great having you here today. Sorry about the little bit of a difficulty getting going here. And for those who listen to me tripping over my tongue wonderfully at the beginning here, there is actually a proper bio posted at www.boydgraves.com. So you won't have to try and decipher what I was trying to say.
We'll make a link at our website when we archive the show.
I appreciate that. And if I could give the 800 number again,
sure.
57-9387, our book State Origin will hit the street in about a week. We believe that it will add further insight into these laboratory programs that are decimating humanity.
Well, that's good. We had good timing to help the announcement of your book.
Super.
And we'll keep in touch with the waves hopefully we'll be making. And okay, well, we'd like to thank you for being on Black Op Radio and getting this out there. Some of these things even I wasn't aware of, and I've heard a fair bit about them. But
I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to have to dig up and find a few references that you may have used.
Well, we've got some more for you, Len. Please don't hesitate, as well as anyone else. We're about re-education, and we are going to have a review of this U.S. Special Virus Program.
Yeah, that would be the first thing in order.
Yes, sir.
So we'll have to urge everyone to go to your website and sign that petition.
Absolutely.
And it's the minimum you can do just by adding your name to a list to have just an investigation and see where this leads to.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, having said that, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us, and our guest today, Dr. Boyd Ed Graves, speaking about AIDS. This has been Black Rock Radio number 40 with Len Osanek and Anita Langley.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Ed.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye. Thanks again for everybody joining us, and we should be here next week with Sue Kelly, and she's going to be talking about vaccines. So we're gonna try to keep up this this vaccine awareness bit for a while and see if we can't stir up a little bit of a fuss. It is hitting the news a bit around Vancouver these days, so hopefully the trend continues. Good night, everybody.
Black Op Radio, broadcasting weekly from the Fiasco Brothers Recording Studio in Vancouver, Canada. You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network.